My name is Jessica. I'm 26 years old and I work at an insurance company. I used to be kind of a party girl in school, but I've definitely settled down since then. About a month ago, I got a Facebook message from a girl named Hannah. She said that we went to high school together, but I honestly didn't recognize her photos. I sent her a pretty basic response because I didn't want her to know that I had no idea who she was. We started chatting for a bit, and she brought up a lot of stories from school that I didn't remember. She seemed nice enough, though. We ended up messaging each other for about a week. I know I should have just stopped responding, but I felt really awkward about the whole thing. Eventually, she asked if we could meet at the Starbucks near my house to catch up. I told her I was busy, but she wouldn't take no for an answer. Eventually, I gave in and agreed to meet with her on the weekend. That Saturday, I went to Starbucks, and she was there waiting for me. The only reason I knew it was her was because I recognized her face from the photos she'd put on Facebook. She jumped out of her chair, ran over, and gave me a hug. She acted like we were best friends or something. She even ordered me a caramel latte because she remembered that it was my favorite. And she was right, it was. We drank our coffees and talked for about an hour. She seemed to remember so much about our high school, and she kept name-dropping a lot of my friends from back then that I hadn't talked to in years. Well, the more we sat together, the guiltier I felt about lying to her. I really wanted to tell her that I didn't remember her, but it was way too late for that now. Just as we were about to leave, Hannah's smile disappeared. "I was hoping that you would say something about Dylan," she said. I didn't know who Dylan was, but I could tell from her expression that she was talking about something very serious. "Okay," I said. "How is Dylan?" Apparently that was not the question she wanted because she slapped me across the face. "Don't you dare joke about him," she said. "He's still at the bottom of the well." I was speechless. Was she talking about a dead person? Did she murder someone and then leave the body in a well? I'm sorry, I said. I figured that now was the best time to come clean. I told her that I didn't remember who she was, and I had no idea who Dylan was. I said that she seemed really nice, and I was too embarrassed to tell her that I didn't remember her. She didn't respond for a long time, and then she said that she didn't believe me. She said that I knew exactly who she was and what I did to Dylan. Now it seemed like she was accusing me of murder. I asked her to sit down so we could just talk this over, but she said she had to leave. She rushed out of there without saying goodbye. I went back home right after that and saw that Hannah had deleted her Facebook entirely. I genuinely didn't know what had just happened, but I was comforted by the fact that I'd probably never hear from her again. But for the next few days, I couldn't stop thinking about Hannah. I called some of my high school friends and asked them, but no one knew who she was. Then about a week later, I went to that same Starbucks. I ordered my caramel latte and sat in the corner. I was scrolling through my phone, just reading through the news, when I noticed that someone had left a book on the table next to me. It looked weirdly familiar. I grabbed it and realized that it was my high school yearbook. Now, at first, I thought it was a really strange coincidence, especially since my high school was on the other side of the state. Then I remembered Hannah and realized that she must have planted it there. I started searching through the pages, but I couldn't find anyone named Hannah at my school. However, I did find someone named Dylan. I barely knew him. I remember drinking with him at a couple of parties. We might have hooked up once or twice, but he just wasn't very memorable. I grabbed my phone and did a search of his full name. Right away, I found a news article about his disappearance right after graduation. There wasn't anything more recent than that, so I could only assume that he was never found. How could I not remember that happening? Feeling extremely creeped out, I left the yearbook on the table and hurried out of the building. That night, I called one of my old classmates and asked her about Dylan. She didn't remember Hannah, but she definitely remembered Dylan. She told me about some wild party at a farmhouse where Dylan and I got into a big argument. That's when the memories came flooding back. I guess I'd block them out. Dylan and I were both pretty drunk. He said something offensive, and I stormed off. He ran after me to apologize. And that's it. I didn't remember what happened after that. Did I do something to him? Did I push him into a well? I had to find answers. I was planning to go back to my hometown for the holidays, but I decided to go a bit early. That weekend, I drove all the way back home, telling my parents that I wanted to surprise them with a visit. They were pretty surprised. After taking them both out to lunch, I drove by myself to that old farmhouse where we used to throw parties when we were teenagers. I walked all around the grounds, trying to see if I could find a well anywhere on the property. It took me a while, but I found one hidden behind some bushes. I tried to look inside to see if anything was at the bottom, but it was too dark. I thought I heard a noise behind me, but when I looked, no one was there. When I got back into town, I found one of the few remaining payphones and called the police. I gave them an anonymous tip to look into that well, but I didn't say why. Then, I went back to my parents' house. The next day, I saw on the news that the body of a missing person had just been found. They didn't give out the name, but I knew it was Dylan. The police never contacted me, and I never told anyone else about it. I'm back home now, and I still can't stop thinking about everything that happened. I still don't know who Hannah was, or what really happened to Dylan all those years ago. I want to think that I had nothing to do with his death, but I'm honestly not sure. I was in the middle of the city when it started pouring rain. I didn't have a jacket and decided to go into Starbucks and wait it out. It was pretty busy at the time. I guess a lot of people wanted to get out of the rain. As I walked toward the counter, I saw my Aunt Kathy through the crowd. She was sitting at a table in the corner. I was about to go over and say hi when a man walked out of the restroom and sat next to her. He was young and extremely handsome. He definitely wasn't Uncle Mark. I was too shocked to move. Then, Kathy jerked backwards and pushed him away. She had spotted me. She whispered something in his ear and then got up and walked toward me. She said hi and acted really friendly, as if I hadn't just caught her cheating on my uncle. She asked me how I was doing, but before I could even answer, she offered to treat me to a coffee. I just wanted to leave, but she grabbed me by the arm and pulled me toward the counter. I awkwardly ordered a latte and Kathy paid. I had no idea what to say. Eventually, I said, "Thanks. I'll let you get back to your friend." Aunt Kathy grabbed me by the shoulders, looking directly into my eyes, and asked, "You're not gonna say anything, are you?" I told her that I wasn't, but she could tell that I was lying. She hugged me really tightly and told me to take care of myself. Then, she turned around and went back to her friend. I watched as she leaned close to his ear and whispered something to him. He looked at me with a blank expression. I got my latte pretty soon after that and decided to get out of there. I didn't care that it was still pouring rain. I hurried down the street looking for another shop that I can go inside. The street was mostly office buildings, so I couldn't find anywhere to go. I rounded a corner, which led me into an alley. It was a dead end. I was about to turn back onto the main street when someone grabbed me from behind. I spun around and saw Kathy's boyfriend looking down at me. Back in the coffee shop, I hadn't realized how huge he was. He towered over me. "Hi," he said in a threatening voice. "What can I do to make all this go away?" I looked around. No one else could see us. We were all alone in that alley. "Nothing," I told him. "But it's okay. I won't say anything." "That's not what Kathy said," he muttered. I started to back away. I told him that I didn't want any trouble. He reached into his pocket. For a second, I thought he was going to pull out some money to bribe me, but instead, he pulled out a knife. He raised it to eye level, making sure that I could see just how long and sharp it was. "Kathy and I have a good thing going," he said. "No one's going to get between us." And before I could say anything, he jabbed me in the stomach. I twisted out of the way, but the knife still grazed me in the side. The man jumped on top of me, pressing me hard against the brick wall. Pain surged through me. I was drenched with rain, and I could feel the gash on my side. He shoved me again, and the back of my head banged against the wall. He held me in place and raised the knife blade to my throat. "I can't let you talk," he said. Before he could cut me again, I kneed him in the groin. I guess that surprised him because he doubled over. Without his hand pressing against me, I started to run back onto the main street. Suddenly, I saw Kathy standing in my way. She wasn't looking at me, though. She was staring horrified at her boyfriend. "What are you doing?" she asked him. "That's my niece!" Then she reached out. "Give me the knife!" I started to calm down. I knew that my aunt would never allow someone to kill me. I stood off to the side as Kathy slowly approached her lover. He mumbled something and handed her the knife. "Thank you," Kathy said. She looked at the knife blade for a long moment, and then she added, "You can't kill my niece. Let me do it." Then she turned toward me, holding the knife out. I was wrong. She was going to hurt me. The man grabbed me by the arm to hold me in place while Kathy walked toward me with the knife extended. She slashed it through the air. She was my aunt. I've known her since I was a baby. How could she even think of hurting me just to keep her affair a secret? "You can't do this," I told her. "I'm sorry, hon. I just can't let Mark know about him. You understand." And then she thrust the knife forward. She would have stabbed me in the stomach if I hadn't twisted to the side at the last second, pushing the man in front of me. Kathy was moving too fast to stop herself, and she slammed the knife into her lover's stomach. He crumpled to the ground at my feet. Kathy screamed in horror, falling to her knees. With her boyfriend bleeding on the ground, she held him and told him it was going to be okay. Blood dripped out of his mouth, mixing with the rain falling on his face. Kathy grabbed the handle of the knife, but the man begged her not to pull it out. His mouth was too filled with blood for her to understand, though, and she pulled it out anyway. She probably thought she was helping him. He gasped once, and then fell back. He was dead. Kathy turned toward me, pure hatred in her eyes. But it was too late. I was already running away. I raced back into the Starbucks where I knew I'd be safe. From there, I called the police. Once they arrived, they found the man lying dead in the alley. They still haven't found Kathy, though. I doubt they ever will.
It was my 21st birthday, and the room was spinning. My head felt very light, and I wanted to vomit. I wanted to punch myself until I didn't feel the insistent chime in my stomach, and I wanted it all to stop. I wanted them all to leave, to go away, and to cease the noise that surrounded me. My ears were ringing, a party song was playing in the background, and people were dancing to the beats. I could hear someone say that I was finally old enough to drink, and another one say I was ready to be sorted by a man. It all made me very sick, and I wanted it to stop. I was wearing a red dress. It fell right on my skin and made me hyperventilate. My mom said it was fine and that I looked great in the dress. She snickered about me finally getting a boyfriend and even joked about red dresses and other things. Like blood. I was thinking of blood, but not the kind my mother was referring to. I felt the coppery feeling of it at the back of my mouth, and I was suddenly craving some blood to soak my hands in. I wondered what would happen if they saw me, or sweet little Betty, blood-soaked. "Betty, come dance with us," Stephanie called. She was smirking at me, but others could easily see it as a smile. Stephanie was my best friend. She had the whitest teeth and the shiniest hair, And right now, it was her blood I wanted to see on my hands. I shook my head at her, not trusting myself to speak and respond to her plea. I pretended as though I didn't notice how delighted she was. I was visibly shaking, and it was exactly what she wanted from me. I was excited about my birthday. I was finally going to be able to get my driver's license and drive around. I would be a legal adult and be able to drink and do a lot of things. It was supposed to be a wonderful day. Mom and Dad were going to gift me a new car. I was pretty. I had a boyfriend who was in college, and I had the best friend I could kill for. Stephanie was everything to me until a few months ago. My stomach roiled just at the thought of it. My birthday present wasn't a surprise. I knew it was going to happen, and I helped plan it all. But she insisted that I pretend as though I didn't know about it. I was to come home and act surprised at the people at my home wishing me a happy birthday. "It'll be fun and perfect for the photos," Stephanie had said as she twisted her hair around her finger. "Besides, you're a talented actress and it will all look good." "You think so?" I had asked, and she nodded. The thing about Stephanie was that she would make you believe something, even if you knew deep down that it was a lie. So I followed her home after I got ready at her place, and right before we walked in, she pulled me aside and she said she had a surprise for me. "What is it?" I asked eagerly. Stephanie grinned, a wicked grin I can never forget, then whispered in my ears, "I hooked up with your boyfriend like a million times, and I kind of want it for myself. Jacob was going to tell you later, but I couldn't hold it in any longer." Ever since I knew Stephanie, I was always second to her in everything. She was pretty, her parents were rich, and she had better grades. The only thing Stephanie didn't have was my boyfriend, Jacob. Her revelation made me sick, and I turned red with anger. I felt pain and betrayal in such a way that it felt as hot as acid in my heart. It was as though she had ripped my soul apart and stamped on it. Stephanie grinned, then skipped into the house, leaving me behind, reeling. The pain and fiery anger from within me didn't simmer down. It only grew hotter and more unbearable. I watched her throughout the party, and she knew that I did. I would catch her blowing kisses to Jason, who would look shy and stare somewhere else. I wanted to spill blood. It triggered me to think that Stephanie could easily take away something that was mine without remorse, not caring about how I felt. I wasn't going to let her get away with it this time around. I simply couldn't. I was going to teach both of them a lesson. But now that I needed to pretend to enjoy my party, I drowned acrid vodka, and it only fed on the fire inside of me. "Time for the piñata," someone yelled. I wasn't sure who it was, but I smiled brightly at everyone and nodded. Jason stood next to me and kissed my cheek, and all I wanted to do was blow his brains out. It was a sort of family thing to keep the piñata tradition, no matter how old we were, but the candy replaced money. My cousin Sasha came over and wrapped a cloth around my eyes. It was see-through and nobody could tell. She then placed a baseball bat in my hands, and I finally smiled my first genuine smile of the night. I was ready to bash something open. Everyone around me cheered as I walked towards the piñata right before me. People crowded the piñata, ready to grab the money the second I hit it. I was good at this, and my vision was clear. So, when I swung, I didn't hit the target. The sound resonated around me, and the room fell silent. But I didn't stop. I hit again and again and again. The sound of breaking bones filled me with satisfaction. Now, people were screaming. Someone begged me to stop, but nobody did anything as I continued to hit my best friend over and over again. There was so much. People were crying for me to stop, a look of horror in their faces as I continued to hit Stephanie with the baseball bat. She was dead already, but I wasn't done yet. I felt electric. I felt alive. I didn't stop until her face was mangled, and blood covered her face and the floor. And some of the blood even got on my hands. It was sticky and warm. I finally stopped and stepped back from Stephanie's now dead body. I wouldn't have to see her smirk anymore, and she wouldn't be able to steal what was mine. A happy birthday to me, I said, and I turned around to find everyone looking at me in horror. Jason's face was ashen with terror. He knew why I had just killed Stephanie, and he knew he would be next. I gave Jason a huge smile before I turned to look at everyone else and said, "Let's continue the party, shall we?" Nobody spoke. The silence in the room was nearly choking. I was the birthday girl. Didn't I have the liberty to do anything I wanted on my special day? Some days I feel skinnier than all the other days.
Sometimes I can't tell. My name is Matt, and I'm 48 years old. I used to be a plastic surgeon until recently. For some reason, since I was a teenager, I thought that the idea of being able to change people's appearances was both fascinating and artistic. Perhaps I also suffered from some kind of God complex deep inside my forbidden subconscious. But regardless, I always wanted to help people. Most of them just wanted to pursue some idea of vanity. Perhaps what they needed was mental therapy to improve their self-esteem and perception of the world, instead of simply having a nose job just because society tells them that small noses are better than big ones. I now understand that. But back then, I thought I was fixing them. But not all the cases were that superficial. Quite the opposite. I was also involved in reconstructing faces and other parts of the bodies of people who suffered terrible and disfiguring accidents. From car crashes to war injuries, and even victims of gruesome and traumatizing crimes. I once had a patient, a man, whose ex-wife threw a chemical solution which caused burns to his face. With the help of my assistants and nurses, after 1 year of complex surgeries, my team was able to reconstruct his face up to 95%. The man was very pleased and immensely happy with the results, and very thankful. This is one of those significant episodes that will forever make me proud. As for my personal life, I got married when I was in my early 30s. My wife's name was Meredith. The first couple of years were great. Unfortunately, as time went by, Meredith, ironically, started to develop a fixation about how she wanted her face to look. "Please, Matt, I want you to enhance my lips. I just need them a little bit bigger, sexier. Just like Angelina Jolie," she said to me once. "Honey, you are perfect as you are. Don't start obsessing over your appearance. Where does that come from?" "I shouldn't talk about my work. It's a negative influence," I answered. "No, it's not your fault, Matt. I want to do it for myself," Meredith insisted. "Absolutely not. I will not do it. Let's not discuss it anymore, please," I replied, almost angry. As weeks went by, this became my reaction to Meredith's complaints and her fantasies about a plastic surgery. I shouldn't have been so defensive, because one day, I got a call from Meredith's brother, Jeff. "Matt, it's Jeff. Something happened to my sister."
"What? Is she all right?" I asked in a panic.
"Not really, no. She's at the hospital. One specific hospital, to be more precise."
"Is she hurt? An accident? Tell me, Jeff!"
"She is alive, and she isn't in danger, but I think you better come and see for yourself. I'll give you the hospital's address," Jeff said. I went as fast as I could. I knew that hospital. It was actually a clinic which specialized in plastic surgery. I guess you could say they were a part of my competition, but they were far from being the best. I immediately realized what was going on. I met Jeff inside the clinic and he confirmed my deepest fears. "Meredith had a surgery. I know you were against that and you were definitely right, but you know my sister, stubborn. Unfortunately, it didn't go so well. They genuinely ruined her lips. She looks like the Joker, the villain from Batman." "I'm sorry for being so blunt, but it is what it is," Jeff explained. "Oh no, can I see her?" "I suppose so. She doesn't want to be seen, though. Especially by you, Matt."
"I don't care. Take me to her room, Jeff. Now!"
"Okay, follow me." When I entered Meredith's room, she was crying.
"Matt, don't look at me! I'm hideous!"
And in fact, she was. But I didn't tell her that, of course. Don't worry, I will fix this, and we will sue these butchers. I will not rest until their licenses are taken away, and they will pay us for all the damages, including psychological ones. I will get us the best lawyers, I said to Meredith as I hugged her.
You were right. I'm so sorry, Matt. Forgive me. I don't know what was going on in my head. Too much social media, I guess. That's what happens when people who don't work have too much free time on their hands. My sins are sloth and vanity,
Meredith said. Well, at least you were over that crazy idea of wanting to change your face. I'll fix it, with my own hands and my own clinic, I said to Meredith. I did my best, but it was simply not possible to give my wife her original appearance back. She looked better, but not like her previous self. As months went by, Meredith became very depressed. She started drinking, and sometimes she even went out alone without telling me. Went to bars because she didn't want to drink at home. She was embarrassed and was ashamed of herself. One night, I got a call from the police. Meredith had died in a car crash. She was completely drunk. Her face was completely disfigured because of the accident. It's scary how things turn out sometimes. Like everything has a meaning or a message. I was devastated. During the first couple of months, I had terrible nightmares. Meredith would appear in front of me. Her face would be grotesque, like a monster. During one of those dreams, she tried to come close to me and wanted to make love, but even her body was hideous.
What's the matter, Matt? I'm not good enough for you anymore, she said during that nightmare.
I woke up covered in sweat in the middle of the night.
I can't take this anymore. I'm going insane. I can't fix death. And what happened?
I said to myself. I tried to turn the lights of my bedroom on, but they were not responding. I got up from my bed and soon realized that there was no electricity in the house. But then I saw an eerie light coming from the living room. It was dark yellow. I went in to see what was producing such light. I couldn't believe what I saw. Meredith? Is that you? The light had the shape and facial features of my dead wife, her original features. Yes, Matt, it's me. I'm at peace now. But I do want to ask you something. I want you to abandon your career as a surgeon and dedicate yourself to conventional medicine. It's the only way you can overcome the trauma of losing me. With time, you'll also feel better about yourself. I have to go now. Goodbye, Meredith's ghost said. And then she simply vanished in the thin air. I can't really say if it was a dream or not. But I did follow that advice. I now work at a clinic where I practice general and conventional medicine. The nightmares have stopped, although I will never truly accept what happened to Meredith. But at least, I found some peace in my head by helping common people who just want to be healthy and be cured from their pain.